Excuse me, this is the operator. Need to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I would like to introduce your host for today's call. We have Ms. Gruber-White. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Lori. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IRD call on Monday, the 26th of April. We have Edmund Chung, Owen Smigelski, Robert Hutchinson. From staff, we have Steve Sheng, Julie Headland, Francisco Arias, Dave Piscitello, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Jeremy Hitchcock may not be able to join today. If he does join, it will be later on in the call. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Edmund.
And thank you also, Gisela. Edmund, I do have a suggestion, if you would like, on how we might proceed with this call. I had sent around a revised matrix from the last call. Just to remind those who might not have been on the last call, we had a discussion of the matrix that Steve Sheng has provided that has in it a description of three different models. And we discussed that extensively in the last few calls, and I made some revisions based on the discussion on the last call. And Edmund, I was wondering if you think it might be useful to maybe look at the three different models in the matrix and consider how this might help us to perhaps arrive at some recommendations.
Thanks. I think that's a good idea. Please take it forward.
Great. Well, I was wondering, I know you didn't have a chance to be on the call last time since you had a conflict. Had you had a chance to look at the matrix? I didn't know if you had any thoughts to sort of get us started. In particular, as staff, we're really not trying to make any determinations between the different models, and we're really hoping to be, guided by the work team. Some of the things we discussed fairly extensively on the last couple of calls were, to take out some of the requirements relating to translation and change those to transliteration and sort of to further define the three models. Do you have any thoughts on the three models to get us going, or should we just go ahead and open this up to discussion?
Honestly, I'm looking at it right now, and please jump right into it, and we'll provide my input as we go along.
Great. Thank you, Edmund. To get us started, is anybody who's on the call here, if you'd like to speak up, we have three different models. We've looked at those models based on the impact to registrars, to registries, and registrants. And then we'd also added a new section on the impact to users of WHOIS and the technical impact to applications. Just as a reminder, and I did send around the matrix, Model 1 is requiring registrants to provide a must-be-present language to WHOIS and, in addition, give the option to provide data in local languages. Model 2 has registrants providing their registration data in a script that can be accepted by the registrar and the registrar to provide a point of contact for transliteration and abuse issues based on request. And Model 3 has registrants providing their registration data and a script that can be accepted by the registrar, and registrar provides tools to assist the registrant in providing for transliteration services and for publishing it in a must-be-present language in WHOIS. What is the sense of this working group with respect to whether or not Model 1, 2, or 3 might be a useful starting-off point or a set of recommendations coming out of this working group? Don't all speak at once. Okay.
Julie, this is Bob Hutchinson.
Yeah.
I guess from my perspective, I was more interested in the technical implementation of what we were proposing, and it seems that the three models, if you will, for language transliteration and who's doing it and so on and so forth, that forms the core of what this matrix is about, but all three of those result in the same technical implementation? Is that what we're essentially saying, is you put the internationalized characters that are in the WHOIS data either in UTF form directly in an ASCII UTF form in the port 43 data, or in the case of U labels and A labels, PUNI code, I guess. So that is the proposal that people have in front of us for the technical implementation. Just to be clear, so they're down here where it says impact to applications. None of these make any differences as to, they're all the same in terms of their impact to applications. Is that correct, the way I'm reading this matrix? And maybe Steve or somebody can comment as to whether I'm reading it correctly or not.
Hi, this is Steve.
Mm-hmm.
I think Model 1 and Model 3 both require a must-be-present language. And also Model 1 would require optionally a language of local language or script in the WHOIS. So in terms of the technical impact, Model 1 and Model 3 are very similar to the applications. Model 2, it's very different. I think it stretches the limit further, because in Model 2, we don't have a limit or any requirement on what language user would put into. So that has, I think, greater impact from a technical standpoint to both registrars and registries. That's my understanding. I hope others on the call can clarify and help on this issue. Thanks.
This is Francisco, my speak.
Please, Francisco, go ahead.
From my reading of the options, I think all three models will have the same impact, in the same technical impact, since they all allow for localized registration data to be published in the quiz. So doesn't matter which one we choose, there will be some technical impact. That's my reading of this matrix.
Yes, I agree, Francisco.
This is Julie. Bob, is that a helpful explanation with respect to your question on the impact among the different models? Technical impact, I should say.
Yeah, I guess I'm still confused by Steve's answer, because I'm looking for the impact applications that are reading port 43 data off of a WHOIS server primarily is that impact. And maybe that's not what he's focusing on in his response.
So Bob, the question is the impact to WHOIS clients running port 43 for each of these?
Yes. Models? Yes.
Okay. Let me think. So for model 3, the the registrar will provide the transliteration service and then put the transliteration of the WHOIS into the of the registration data into the WHOIS record.
Right.
So for that one, then it's not too much different from today, what we are seeing today, right? So for Model 2, registrants can provide any kind of script to registrar, and registrar will pass that along to the registry. So what we are seeing is from a Port 43 perspective, will be a full version of, internationalized registration data. So, we could have, everything internationalized, all the local contact information would be internationalized, uh-huh. Right? So for Model 1, I think we're seeing somewhere in the middle. Because registrars would still require a must be present a script. So we have some continuity in here because some of those are still in current US ASCII format. But we have an option to add localized script. So in terms of impact, fine grain, I think Model 2, is fully internationalized, and Model 1 is there. It's internationalized, but it depends on what the user wants to do, or the operation of the registrar, what they require.
Mm-hmm.
Does that clarify things a bit?
Yes. But
rails on the back of the doors.
Tights.
Okay. So, Steve, this is Julie. A question, just from my own edification. You were saying Model 2 then is fully internationalized, and just remind me again, Model 3 would be most similar to what we have today, and 1 would be somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, others can jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, because what we are saying in Model 3 is the registrar can provide the information in local scripts, but the registrar would transliterate them and publish that and also provide that to the registry. So that's essentially the same as what we are having today.
Mm-hmm.
But then the burden of the transliteration is being put on the registrar's shoulder.
I see. I hear someone speaking in the background. I don't know if someone thinks they're on mute, but they're not. Anyway, there's some discussion on the line. I just want to let someone know that's someone on a call. So Bob, as far as technical impact and the Port 43 applications on Port 43, did Steve address your question as far as that impact?
I guess I see from the Port 43 client applications
mm-hmm.
that either one of these models is going to wind up with a text file, an ASCII text file being spit at the Port 43 client that contains UTF-8 characters, in some cases that represent registrant data in local scripts of various and sundry types. In no case are we proposing, at least in any one of these models, mm-hmm. whether or not that script defines the language or, in other words, it's just UTF-8 characters. It doesn't go beyond that, okay? And it's a representation of what the registrant data or the, well, it's the registrant data primarily, in their local script, okay? Now, that's all there is from a technical standpoint at this point. I guess what I'm looking for from a technical standpoint also perhaps is an example or a couple of examples of what we think the port 43 text content for a few applicants might look like given these three scenarios, okay? And I don't know if somebody could go and do that exercise and provide us an example, okay? It would be helpful, I think, for the group.
Okay, yeah.
The reason that I say that it would be helpful is that it depends on a lot on how you think of the impact to applications. So if I'm building a who is viewer of some sort, either a JavaScript for a web browser or something like that, if I just present to the user a series of UTF encoded ASCII characters, it would just look like, you know, kind of a hex dump of what the information is. Okay, that's an unchanged standard Port 43 application today. But I would assume that eventually people will modify those Port 43 applications and they will present to the user not only the UTF-8 representation in the ASCII characters, but they would represent the actual internationalized character string itself, okay, as, you know, as it's intended to be displayed. And the impact of the application in these cases is that you have to change from a standard flat ASCII file display to something that's parsed and presented kind of in internationalized characters, okay? And that's, I think, primarily, it's the same, that implication or the change necessary to update the who is displayers is the same for every one of these models, okay? See, I'm looking at this primarily from a technical standpoint as to what we're asking people to do and what there will be available coming off of port 43, which is, the holy grail of who is data representation, okay?
Right. So, so I think there are, if you categorize the applications that use Whois, you know,
right,
we have the port 43 client, like the standard Unix client.
Mm-hmm.
We
yep.
have the web Whois, right? You know,
yep.
using web browsers and to view Whois.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this customized applications. So for web browser the Whois to display properly on web browsers, it depends on both the operating system support and the browser support. So if have support for UTF-8 and the browser can correctly parse it, then you know it should be no problem. You know, some operating systems like Windows, maybe Windows 98 or IE or maybe IE5, may not be able to support internationalized internationalized IDNs either. They don't have a full support for that. And
right.
And that, I mean, it's probably, you know, the simple thing to do is to upgrade to a newer browser, which is very little cost and is widely available. Personal opinion. So I think from a web browser perspective, you know, the display wouldn't be a problem. I see the bigger problem of display comes for these customized applications and also port 43. And in terms of the impact for all of those three models, I agree with you. Those have very similar impact, you know, to both the port 43 and to the customized application. And we haven't discussed those yet, but I think those are independent of these three models.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear is, yes, you agree then that the impact on applications is the same no matter which model of the three we're picking, because
right.
The technical implementation at the ASCII WHOIS file level is the same for every one of these. You know, there's the data will change, okay?
Right.
But the technology that we're using to store and display the data in its correct form isn't changing across the three models that you're talking about here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's still the elephant in the room we need to address, you know, too, but you know, that those are independent of these models. So,
right.
But we'll kind of tackle kind of the easy ones first.
Well, I think actually the three, picking between the three models, going back to Julie's opening question, I would be okay with, you know, floating a proposal that are you looking for something to be floated at the Brussels, meeting, Julie?
Yeah, this is Julie. So what we're trying to see if we can determine here is whether or not there is something that we'd be prepared to say at Brussels along the lines of some, you know, preliminary recommendations. I think in either case, we'd like to be able to have you know, something to report as far as our discussions and the progress thereof, you know, I wouldn't know for sure whether or not we'd have recommendations ready, but it would be, I think, helpful if we could sort of move in that direction. Sorry if that's kind
mm-hmm.
of a silly response. It's really more what the working group would like to do and how, you know, you proceed with. You know, with what with this discussion and how we as staff can help.
Right. I guess the piece that maybe was some part of the elephant that Steve was referring to is there's currently no formatting standard at all in how you present the WHOIS data. There's just a requirement that you present it in. You know, in a human readable form, and the formats come back, you know, virtually impossible to write an automated parser to parse the data, because every registrar uses slightly different formats for, say, their .com WHOIS data and so on and so forth. So, is that part of what this protocol recommendation is also going to do, or we essentially punted on that and said we're just going to leave it the way it is, and the only thing we're going to deal with is these transliteration scenarios for the internationalized data, but we won't deal with trying to make the who is data form uniform in any form or fashion across the various who is databases. Is that a correct assumption or?
This is Dave. Can I answer that?
Sure. Go ahead, Dave.
In a parallel activity, you may be aware that we're looking at future Whois service requirements. Steve Shang had written a fairly lengthy paper about that essentially gathered an inventory of service requirements. And as part of the effort for that activity, one of the things that we're looking at are the data that currently comprise a registration record and whether or not there would be value in establishing some normal, some normalization or some formal data structure that we could reliably use as parties who develop services or who develop client applications. And so one of the things that one of the things that this committee might do is weigh in on that topic and say part of what might make this work for IRD would be to have a more formal data structure and or more formal separators or semantics and syntax for existing data.
Excuse me, where I connect the dots here is without a frame for, what this data is, if you present it to me as an English or an ASCII, romance character reader, if you don't even give me the context of what these internationalized characters are supposed to be expressing, like a name or an address or street and so on and so forth, I'm going to have a hard, really, really hard time. I can look at an English street name and address and so on and so forth. But if you do it completely in Japanese or in Chinese or some of the other, or I don't know what they refer to those high density glyph languages, I'm not going to be able to even tell what I'm looking at, okay, let alone try to be able to translate it. That's to me, that's where it sort of connects. If you have transliteration between a ASCII, standard ASCII character set and a UTF-8 label, without knowing that, and if you just scramble it all over a who is form, it's going to be really difficult for somebody to figure out, who's not a native reader of that foreign script. So that's my point about that. Does that make sense, Dave?
Yeah. It makes perfectly good sense. I'm simply trying to think of the right answer for you. I want to try to avoid having duplicate and worse, different opinions in terms of what has what would need to be done. I agree that if we continue along a path of arbitrarily tagging or not tagging data elements, and we incorporate, glyph-based languages alongside, Roman characters and Arabic numbers, it's going to be very difficult for humans to read. And I think automation may have a little less of a problem because of the code point uniqueness. But even there, I can see some complexity in writing parsers. So.
Mm-hmm.
Point well taken. Do others have some thoughts in terms of different models and merits?
Uh,
No?
This is Edmund. Just curious, I have to admit that I'm trying to catch up to the conversation, but in terms of the format we're talking about, is this how should I say? What has been the discussion? I'm trying to click around and try to figure out the last couple of meetings. I apologize for not being there, but where are we with just generally the we talked about format, but I'm not sure what led us to this discussion, and I'm a little bit worried about trying to set rules that somehow have implications to the existing who is, and just want to make sure that I understand that with the internationalized data, we will have it's more likely that we will need some sort of format, but what has led us to that discussion? Just very briefly, I apologize for sort of asking this.
Edmund, this is Steve. Let me try to answer, and others feel free. I think Bob's point was saying if the Whois is completely internationalized or internationalized substantially, a non-native speaker of these languages may need some context to be able to identify, you know, what those fields about, essentially labels to the field. So, you know, to understand, oh, this column is a name of the registrant. This column is the address. This column, you know, is the technical contact. You know, I think that's the, Bob, did that characterize your intent correctly?
Yes, she did. Thanks.
Yeah. So this is for the internationalized data, or in general, given the whole thing is internationalized?
Well, for example, let me if you look at some who is data coming out of port 43 for some registrants, the Whois data is buried in a sea of text that has to do with registrar contact information and what I would consider to be almost quasi-advertising by them, and so on and so forth. And if you have them internationalize that stuff and put that in who is, okay, it becomes for a non-native reader of that script. It becomes very difficult to parse out, you know, what pieces are, you know, what is this? You know, there's an awful lot of wheat in the, and, you know, wheat and chaff kind of situation for a non-native reader of that script. So that's another part that I think, you know, it would help us if we had some examples of what people think this internationalized who is port 43 data could and should look like, or could and would look like, given what today's data looks like.
I'll offer, this is Dave Piscatella, I'll offer some speculative examples. So let's imagine that today you are looking at registration information from .org. .org has a specific format where they have a tag with a colon and then a value. So in the example where, or in the model where the registration data would be in both a mandatory ASCII 7 and an international character set, you could envision a record that is larger than what we currently have today, where one piece is exactly what you get from .org as it reads today. The second piece has the labels, the tags, registrar, colon, and then whatever the language is that the registrar actually collected the data in. So that's one example of what I might imagine in the who is. Now, another example might be that everybody says, we can't do this without XML. And we go out and, all agree that here's a data structure that the IETF blesses and that the GNSO community blesses, and it all happens yesterday. And so the data would all have XML tags for both the ASCII 7 version and the international version. So those are two examples of what you might see coming down the pipe on a port 43.
Right.
Right. Now let's take a look at what happens when it gets at the end of the pipe. So there are two possibilities at the end of the pipe. One is that somebody's going to transform what just came down into a web page, a render web page out of that data. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then it's a matter of, as Steve said, is this browser capable of displaying both not only ASCII 7, but characters in the international characters that is in the registration data. Similarly, if it's a client application on a Windows machine or a Linux box, then the client application has to be able to display in the appropriate character set. Of course, those have dependencies on the libraries on the client to actually support not only the Whois application, but the rendering of the characters and fonts and glyphs and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Was that helpful?
Yes.
I guess my question originally was I understand that part is it, well, actually I should restate. If I understand it correctly, so what we're right now discussing about is that if there should be a part where there's the existing Whois output, and then there would be an additional part where in essence that's the internationalized part. That part would be more structured. Is that and there needs to be some sort of a structure to indicate that this is the internationalized part. Is that the question was really is that what we're talking about?
Well, I think we sort of arrived at that. It wasn't, the original question is, what I believe Bob posed was, how do I distinguish these things when I'm the client and when I'm the, when I'm the user? And what will help us as users or application writers to be able to discriminate when, when something comes down or something is delivered over port 43 to a client that is not in ASCII 7. So, there are some conventions that exist today that basically allow a client to ask for, only ASCII 7 or for, some server-dependent character set, for example, in .jp. You can add something to a Who Is command line that says, I want the Japanese characters, or, for whatever you happen to have. But we don't have, we don't have anything that formal yet. So I was simply speculating that, that we could go further and, and say, and at least talk about, if not recommend, some of the consequences that Bob is looking at to try to understand what the user experience is going to be as registrant or as consumer of Who Is information.
In general, I think that's a good idea. I still come back to the question is whether this discussion, I apologize again that I feel a little bit lost, is that the question is, this is something new. This is something to be added for internationalized data, right? We're discussing about a suggestion that would be added for internationalized data rather than as a general Who Is function.
Ah, okay, so let me, so I see where the disconnect is. When Bob had asked the question, I had mentioned that in the GNSO Council had asked ICANN staff to put together an inventory of service requirements and an inventory of known or speculated deficiencies in Who Is. And Steve Shang primarily did the work on that. And one of the recommendations, one of the sets of the technical deficiencies that we identified was that that there is no normal or normalized representation of registration data. Each registrar actually has and registry has a different formulation of what that looks like. So if you go to .org, as I said, there is a tag for the registrar that says registrar colon. If you go elsewhere, there may not be a colon. If you go somewhere else, the contact information is not uniquely identified as name, address, phone, fax, but it's just one opaque string that contains all that information, and it's all under contact. So one suggestion that Steve's paper offers is that it would be very valuable to have some normalization or some convention that people can rely on, so that automation in particular, and now in the case of IRD, representation in multiple languages would be facilitated.
Okay, so the reason why I brought up the discussion is really I'm just not so sure. I for the internationalized data part, I think that's in a sense safe, and I think that's within the scope of our discussion. I'm just wondering whether we're venturing into sort of defining the format of Who Is in general. That's sort of the source of my question.
Yeah, and this is Dave again. That's not our intent. Well, I was simply making the observation that there is a parallel effort, and that we should all pay attention to the fact
cool.
We're looking at that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that it personally. That I think that what we say here and what the GNSO Council deliberates not only in the IRD issue, but in the service or the inventory of service requirements for Who is all above our pay grade, so to speak.
I like that, Dave. Yeah. So my personal observation is, in terms of these three models that we present, the technical implications are not different from each of these three models. So I think this is more of a policy discussion and deliberation, and ultimately a policy decision coming out of this working group. I my sense is the way that we present these three models is we start with a list of the things to see how we can separately, a list of the registration data and see how we can separately internationalize them. So we talk about email address, phone numbers, and those, you know, there are already standards exist for internationalization, and there's not an issue. When it comes to internationalized registration, like user contacts, and we had kind of different opinions on what scripts and what languages that we should require. And I think the goal of coming up a matrix is trying to move forward that discussion. And these are really policy discussions, because the underlying technical implications are essentially similar. So I hope, you know, maybe we can kind of deliberate on these options, and after that, you know, we dig more into the technical implications more. That's my thought.
This is Edmund again. I again apologize for missing a couple of meetings, but in terms of the models, we talked about sort of transliteration or translation. Has there been discussion about what that really entails, especially on the concept of quote-unquote transliteration? There is a general sort of definition of transliteration, but in the Whois context, is there are we talking about just presenting it in a certain format that's relatively readable, or are we talking about some sort of accurate transliteration based on certain standards that for which the transliteration could be used for other purposes? Has that been discussed? Where are we on that?
Edmund, this is Julie. We did discuss transliteration a bit on the last call, and a couple of people on the call mentioned that for some languages there are standards for transliteration, and you know, for other languages there aren't. I think the sense was that, you know, where standards apply, you know, local standards apply, say in Japan or, you know, in Russia, those would be used, or elsewhere. But we didn't really get that far into what exactly the transliteration would entail. You know, exactly how would that work? You know, whether or not I think the sense was we wouldn't try to suggest standards, but that, you know, the local standards, if there were any, would apply. And I think that your question is a good one. Perhaps we need to get into a little bit more detail as far as what that would really mean.
I
just wanted to point out, this is one of the hard things that, you know, from staff's perspective is it really would be great to get you, Jay, Andre, and the gentleman from CNNIC all on at the same call, because I think that the four of you represent the most experience with with dealing with character sets that are not easily transliterated. And so if we could carry this conversation over to the email list, perhaps maybe we'll get a little bit more traction. We've sort of working on on partial strength so far as an observation. If we could get everyone together on one call, it might actually help us as staff catalog the many issues around this particular point.
Yes, I think that's a good point, and I agree with it. But I guess the question originates from this relatively loaded word about transliteration, and the question is whether we really mean transliteration, or do we mean some sort of format that is somewhat readable in, let's say, U.S. ASCII. Are we talking about just representing some set of data in a format that is U.S. ASCII, or are we really talking about transliteration? Is really the crux of my question.
Edmund, this is
quite
Steve.
Different.
When I first wrote up the draft matrix, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, to what percentage we need translation and what percentage we need transliteration. You know, for the Russian language, it's probably easier to transliterate than Chinese, you know. So yeah, if like I really as a staff, I don't have too much expertise on that. I really appreciate.
No, I guess yes and no, but Chinese is relatively let's put it this way, it's not impossible to transliterate it. But my question is really, when we talk about these three models, we talk about transliteration. What do we really mean, and should we reestablish some sort of vocabulary that we just say a kind of representation in U.S. ASCII? Is that what we're really talking about, especially in Model 3? Because overall, I think Model 3 seems to be a direction that somehow makes sense. But the question is, what are we really talking about? Because if we talk about translation or transliteration, that's quite prohibitive. But if we talk about that there needs to be some sort of a representation in U.S. ASCII, maybe that's a much better way to describe it, and a way that's much more doable. But that's sort of reason why I brought this whole discussion up.
Right. So my understanding is, to have it fully in U.S. ASCII, there are different levels of accuracy associated to it. So take Chinese, for example. If we have a Chinese address, you know, we can just put the pinyin, you know, that's like Roman character U.S. ASCII, and put that into WHOIS, right? But a more accurate, perhaps, is to put parts of the street in pinyin, and you know, and translate part of that, you know, like 街道, translate that into actually street or avenue or apartment. You know, that's my initial thought. I think there are different levels of accuracy associated with it.
Exactly. That's sort of where I'm coming from, is that if we specify transliteration or translation, then exactly the level of accuracy and you know, how operable we need the data to be. If we just say, you know, this is a kind of data that I guess, sorry for jumping ahead, but this is data for machine to grab and then can do some analysis with, such as issues with trademark or phishing, right? That, then the requirement is quite different than if we say we need a translation or transliteration where it's completely operable, and if we put it on an envelope, it would reach the person.
Right.
Right. So. Again, sorry for jumping ahead, but overall, if we're talking about the former, then I think personally, I think it's fine and it works well. But if for latter, then I think it would be quite a significant job for registrars, and that's, you know, therein lies the sort of the question.
At that, that's more of a policy question, right? Depends on.
Right, right. It is, and that's sort of the reason why I brought it up. Whether there was already extensive discussion on this topic, or this is one of the things that we should really talk about in terms of the three models. I think overall the three models give a good structure for discussion. Right now I'm really bringing up the issue with transliteration because of I guess personally the tendency towards model three if that is being resolved. I shouldn't say resolved, but if that is being better described in a way that's lack of a better word, easier for registrars to implement and registries in some sort.
So, Edmund, this is Julie. I would suggest, if you'd like, that we could try to get the discussion going on this particular question on the list, because I think it's a very important one, and it does, have an impact on how we consider each of the models, and that is the question being, what do we mean by transliteration? And I think you've mentioned, a couple of different levels and, resulting in sort of different levels of accuracy, and perhaps we as staff can try to frame that question to get some discussion going, particularly amongst those working group members like Sean Kong and Andre and Ram as well, who have, particular expertise in this area. Would that be a good way forward?
Yes, but I just one thing is that rather than trying to sort of quote unquote define transliteration, I would suggest going forward and just saying that transliteration or some sort of representation in US ASCII, because whether that works, because if we go down the path of trying to define transliteration, because transliteration is, in a sense, it's defined in linguistic terms. I'm just wondering if we can, in a sense, the three models are being proposed at this point, but I'm just wondering whether we should change the wording a little bit in saying that transliteration or some form that's described in US ASCII, because that would somehow allow us a little bit more flexibility as we go down the path, because if we talk about transliteration, it does bring about quite different connotations. That's really a thing. And the thing is that if we go down the path of getting the mailing list, going to the mailing list and getting everybody to try to figure out what the definition, quote-unquote definition, I guess, of transliteration would be for this purpose, it would still create the same issue. And so I agree that you know, the general approach, but with one slight adjustment, is that we not talk about the definition of transliteration, but we really talk about whether transliteration or some representation in US ASCII is susceptible in a way.
Right. This is Julie. Edmund, thank you. That helps clarify it for me. We're not asking for a definition of transliteration that already exists out there, as you say, linguistically, but whether transliteration or representation in ASCII, those two options, you know, those are the two options we're considering for each of those models. Did I get that correct?
Yes. That's really what I'm suggesting. Is transliteration is to me it's going to be tough, because you need to follow a lot of rules. But if we talk about a model where some form of U.S. ASCII representation, then it could become much easier for the registrar, and it could be a model where it allows certain, let's say, mechanical, some sort of spider to come across and analyze the WHOIS data, without a lot of enhancements to that mechanical process. And would be able to analyze the data meaningfully, but then it doesn't put a heavy burden on registrars to actually produce to be quite direct. It doesn't require the registrant to produce data where, for example, the contact information, the address, could be used as actually put on an envelope and sent to the person. Is that really the big issue that I see?
Right, Edmund, thank you. This is Julie. I was wondering if you might be willing to put this, you know, these thoughts of yours, these questions into an email to the working group. I think I understand what you're saying, but and I know it's a difficult hour for you right now, so just sometime in this week, perhaps, would you be willing to do that?
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to describe what I'm trying to drive at over email.
Thank you, Edmund. I really appreciate that. I think.
Julie, this is Steve. I just have one point before. I know we passed the hour. So we with this working group. Every time we kind of have different people on the call, and I think people have different opinions on which model they prefer. What would be a process that the working group think that we go ahead and kind of to reach some consensus, or you know, knowing that not everybody is on the call at the same time, and yeah. So that's my question for the working group.
Steve, I could comment, and Edmund, of course, please chime in. But I'm on several of these types of working groups, and it because of time zones, it is often difficult to get everyone on the same call, which is why, of course, we're having rotating times. I think suggestions like Edmund's to put a question out to the list is very helpful to get responses and to get people to begin to coalesce around a particular set of recommendations. And I think that as we you know, sort of distill that discussion, we can pull that into perhaps you know, one or two or three sets of recommendations and ask each working group member to respond to those on the list, you know, and of course encourage people to attend the calls as well. Edmund, do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. I think in general, given the situation, it's best to sort of vet any decisions we make over mailing lists. Sort of treated a kind of a IETF approach, if you will, for lack of a better description, to get the consensus on the mailing list. I'm interested to put forward a question. Is that you mentioned a different opinions and stuff. I wonder, on this specific topic, sorry, I haven't reviewed all the minutes from before. On this particular topic, what are some of the what are the views? I presented mine, but
so I think a call two weeks ago or I think 4 weeks ago. There are some discussion thinking you know, Model 1 may be better, and some in the mailing list, for example, Jay, think Model 1 and Model 2, or Model 1 and Model 2 are both okay. And so they're just, you know, I'm trying to anticipate. You know, we are already heard different opinions. Which of these models people think benefit most, and there's no agreement yet. Yeah.
Right. I understand. Was there any discussion on transliteration?
Just. Evan, this is Julie. We did have discussion on the last call, the last two calls previous. The sense was that we would move away from recommendations on translation and then have further discussion on transliteration versus translation. And on the last call, the working group members reiterated that it shouldn't be a recommendation for translation, but for transliteration. But as I mentioned, there wasn't detailed discussion on what would be required with respect to transliteration, and I think that's the particular aspect that it will be helpful to perhaps you pose a couple of questions on to try to get a little more clarification from the working group members in that specific area.
Okay, that's good. Thanks, because I don't want to. I just apologize for using this time here, but I just want to get a quick background on. Whether we have that discussion and what people thought about it. So, yeah, that's useful. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Well, since we are a little over time, if it's okay with you, Edmund, perhaps we'll close up the call. I'll take a first stab at writing up some notes and have Dave and Steve look over those. And in the meantime, if you wanted to send you know, around some thoughts when you had a chance with respect to transliteration to get the discussion going there, that would be great as well.
Sure. Yes, I'll do that. Just before we close, what's the plan going forward, especially driving towards Brussels, and whether we would have some activity there?
So, Edmund, this is Julie. I think we definitely would like to have a presentation at Brussels. If we don't have recommendations ready at that point, I think that we would at least like to be able to say what we've been discussing in progress of those discussions. And this would be, I think, probably a public forum, you know, type of event as opposed to, and the last meeting we just had the presentation at the ESSAC open meeting, I think we'd probably try to have a separate public event on this. And so I think that we're trying to see if we can move forward to something a little more concrete in the area of recommendations, and if not, it would be more along the lines of a progress report.
Okay. I'd like to sort of suggest that we put out something, even if we know that we don't have somewhat of a consensus over it, as a straw man thing, because that would help. I think that would help participation in Brussels and help the whole thing move forward. That's just my opinion, because if we just have a very general, oh, let's talk about this, then we might not get the kind of participation that we want to actually drive towards a recommendation eventually.
Thank you, Evan. This is Julie. I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I think, as staff, we'll try to help see if we can, coalesce, and distill the discussion among the working group members into something, fairly, like framework, as you say, or something along the lines of recommendations if we can. And I think that I should note, too, that I'll look back at the charter, but I think that for consensus, we don't require agreement from every single working group member, and I think we also have the option for, minority reports and so on. Those aren't, ideal, but what I mean to say is that we'd like to try to, get as close to consensus as possible, but failing that, I think, if we have a majority, we could still, have something that we could say.
Sure, and I totally agree, and I guess my suggestion is really just put up something and let people, shoot it down in a way. That way we might get more people to participate in the discussion, because it seems to me, again, I apologize for my own absence, but it seems to me that might help us overall in driving towards the final recommendations.
Thank you, Edmund. Well, we'll as staff we'll take on the task of trying to put together something that might be a straw man, at least, to have people react to. And I think that I think we're definitely moving in that direction. The matrix is helping with that, and I think we can, try to see if we can move further that way, and help the working group move further that way as well.
Right, that's very useful. And again, I think staff has been the work has been phenomenal so far, and I would encourage to keep moving forward. And taking a look at the time, we'll probably have a two or three more meetings to go before Brussels, and thinking about how to lay out that time would be useful as well.
Thank you, Evan. That's an excellent suggestion. We'll try to come up with something more concrete to have people look at before the next meeting, and maybe be able to focus the discussion a little bit more on some specific recommendations.
Sounds good.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, and thank you in particular, Edmund, for taking all of this time. I think it's been an extremely helpful discussion. We'll meet then at the alternate time in 2 weeks, but we'll expect to make some progress prior to that on the list as well.
Thank you, Julie.
Thanks, Julie.
All right. Thanks, everyone, and have a good morning, evening, afternoon. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.